This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
My name is Rich Bradbury. This, of course, is Enterprise BizBytes, and I'm in the studio with
Christine Wong
and Audrey Raj.
We're going to be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. And if you want to get in touch, get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. First off, let's start off with a thank you to all of you that attended BFM Rocks yesterday. All 680-something of you.
No, 700
plus.
Was
it 700
plus
in the end?
Yes.
Great day. Lots of fun. Muzza and the band were clearly rocking it throughout the afternoon. I loved the way I could just go, have you got this to play? And he could just play it.
Yeah, they would oblige. It was awesome.
Yeah, so hope you guys who did attend enjoyed it. And if you didn't, of course, you're going to have to wait until next year for the next Rocks event. But we do have some events later on in the year. We have a couple of breakaways that are happening. One up in Penang, one back here in KL. We'll tell you more details about that throughout the broadcasting session of either today, tomorrow, or maybe we'll keep you waiting, keep you guessing.
Maybe.
Right, so stories for today. We're going to be starting off with a story about an AI matchmaker. This doesn't sound unusual. However, this AI matchmaker could mine Twitter to find you a date, right?
Yep.
Then we have a story about how the new Google Classroom update makes it very hard to cheat on quizzes.
Look at what we've come to.
We've come to that, right? Story number three, why immigration groups have said no to using DNA to reunite separated kids over in the US. Story number four, want to feel happier? Your phone could help.
Yes, maybe.
Apparently. Mm. And then finally, we'll be wrapping up with a story about Instagram and how much they would be worth if they were their own entity. Right, so let's start off with this AI matchmaker then, Chris. How is it different from Twitter at Twitter, Tinder, and all of those kind of stuff?
Right, so this is, just to clarify, it's not like an app, it's not anything like that. It's just an algorithm, it's just like a program that has been created, and it's called CoupleNet. And what it does is it analyzes the tweets of two users and then estimates how compatible the duo would be. So it's it will look at public social media accounts for both explicit and implicit clues that two people could be romantically suitable. So the team behind CoupleNet created a data set of almost 2 million tweets pulled from over 4,600 likely couples. The couples were found by identifying public accounts who sent messages like good night and love you and stuff to each other, I guess.
Via Twitter.
And then after training the algorithm, CoupleNet could identify real couples in the testing data better than other recommendation tools that were given the same data. It's not just about imagining the content as well, but it could also explain like what about that content it thought matched. So it could spot what mutual interests between users it thought suggested a good match, like maybe they both tweeted about the same band, or maybe they both tweeted about like the same sports team or whatever. But CoupleNet could also find pairs correctly even when there were no obvious matching signals. So the researchers say that we believe that hidden, quote-unquote, patterns such as emotions and personality of the users are also being learned and modeled in order to make recommendations.
So it's saying that this algorithm,
yes,
is better at spotting potential couples,
yes,
than we as humans are.
Yes, and on Twitter specifically.
That's very weird. I don't know of any people on Twitter who tweet one another. Well, I don't know that many who would tweet "I love you" via Twitter.
I don't know how that works, because to me it's like if you're already a couple, you would use more direct messaging, like WhatsApp or
talking to one another,
or like being face to face with each other or something. But the thing that I find kind of weird about this though is that like I don't use Twitter to communicate with people, if that makes any sense. I just kind of retweet other people's like stories or like just memes or something. Like I don't.
But
really,
you also put like your opinion on certain things, like incidences or articles or issues. Twitter is where you would put down your thoughts, or this is what I have to say. This is a random thought of the day.
Sometimes,
possibly,
yeah.
Right?
I think everybody kind of approaches Twitter in a different way. I mean, Christine, more of a consumer, I'd say.
I'm more of like a weird little echo valley on Twitter.
Whereas I started off being more of a consumer and absorbing information, but then I kind of started morphing into creating my own stuff and doing my stuff like that. But I don't see... How does it work? I mean, not how does it work, but if people wanted to use this, is it something they can actually participate in, or is it just Twitter saying this is what we can do, or this company saying this is what we can do?
So the point behind using Twitter specifically is that the idea behind CoupleNet was to offer a method of kind of matchmaking that anyone could use on publicly available data.
I see.
So it could potentially one day be turned into a sort of who to follow type feature, but like a who to potentially date sort of feature instead. And they also wanted to overcome issues that crop up on other dating sites like deceptive cell presentation, harassment, and bots. They also, CoupleNet is planning on releasing their own data set so that any machine, and I, this is from the article, this is not me saying this, but quote unquote, so any machine learning inclined cupids out there can build their own matchmaker tool.
This is dangerous.
So that.
So we know there's a market for this because Facebook is into this as well, right? The whole matchmaking thing. They've got a little Facebook, a little dating section that allows people to not view your personal profile because you need to be friends, you know, do that first. But, you know, you can see where another person is going for the same event, and then maybe you guys can, you know, meet up there and have a first date there or something like that. So
in public, which is safe, that kind of stuff.
And then, of course, there's Tinder that's been doing this for quite a bit. Obviously, Twitter recognizes that there is a market for this.
Yeah. What I do kind of like about this, though, is like with Tinder, it's about it's about your looks, obviously. Very few people, I would assume, read the descriptions. And then with Facebook, it's about the things that you're interested in.
Yeah. Yeah.
But with Twitter, I think it's more like a personality based thing, because I don't think a lot of people will be like, "Hey, I'm going to so and so on Twitter" or whatever. It's more just like, "Bleh, these are my thoughts. These are the things I agree with. These are the things that I, you know, based on what I retweet, this is what I'm interested in." So I think that is an interesting way to look at it, and maybe potentially a more, I guess, realistic way of trying to match people up rather than just your aesthetic.
Yeah. And also, I think the older generation will tell you that one of the first things that they look at in a potential partner is that you share the same values.
Right.
And, I think, even the current generation, some boys might feel like, you know, hey, if the girl supports the same football team, that works too. And in a marriage, that could work too. So, you know, I think it's this similar values and similar interests and feeling passionate about similar issues. I see where this is going.
You sound like you speak from experience there, Woods.
In terms of
supporting the same football team.
I am not going to comment on that.
Oh, dear.
But here's the thing, right? No AI or machine or social media thing is going to come close to the success rate of your Indian auntie.
I was just going to say the same thing.
All the Indian families and has that network to kind of like, this boy would be perfect for your daughter, I tell you. And she will tell you and she will make it happen.
Right.
Maybe I need to hire an Indian auntie now. I don't know. Like,
what would they call that app? Or what would they call it?
They call it the brokers.
The brokers.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
This is what I hear. I don't know any auntie brokers, but yes, this is what I hear.
Oh my God. I am curious, though, folks out there on Twitter, you know, have you... I don't want to use the term hooked up. I'd rather use the term met somebody via Twitter. You know, just if you have, just let us know a little bit about that.
And also, you know, what do you use Twitter for? Do you send messages like that, like the stuff that CoupleNet would analyze to people that you're interested in? You know,
right.
Do you slide into people's DMs?
Like, do you think the content that you put out on Twitter would actually accurately reflect your relationship goals and your values?
I don't know. I mean, I often complain on Twitter about you know, things being flooded and things not working. And, you know, I get in touch with our telephone networks and whatever. If people looked at my profile just like that, I would be that complaining old uncle, you know.
You would be matchmate with MPPJ.
Somebody like that, yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Woods. Right, let us know. Get us via Twitter if you can, at BFM Radio. If you don't have Twitter, excuse me, get us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Moving on to our next story then. It's about how Google Classroom have their update makes it harder to cheat on quizzes. Kids will always find a way to cheat, you know.
Kids are getting sneakier and trickier. I mean, in Algeria just last week, we read an article about how the country had to shut down their internet just because they were having nationwide exams.
Right.
Right. To keep kids from cheating. And guess what? Iraq is going to do it in the next 2 weeks as well.
Wow.
That's what it's come to. Kids are so sneaky, they will find a way to cheat at tests. And so...
And it all started with the pub quiz. You know, people... people would go in and they'd be like, Google, Google, Google.
Yeah. Oh. Well, thank you, Google. And because, you know, we attribute some of the blame to Google, with what they've done is they've created a new update to their Google Classroom project where you can actually assign quizzes in Google Forms, and teachers can then lock students into the assignment and keep them from browsing the internet or searching for answers elsewhere.
On the
Google Forms quiz itself. So if you do the quiz on Google Forms,
okay,
you kind of get locked in. And you can't surf any other website or use another browser. And you're kind of stuck there and you're forced to answer the questions as it is.
I'm already thinking that if you're doing that on a laptop, you're going to have your phone in your pocket, right?
Rich.
Okay, no, but this is my...
let's be honest. Yes,
this is my kind of thing, though, is that like when I took exams in school, we weren't allowed to have any devices that could access that sort of information in the first place. And even if we were to take a test on, like, I took ICT tests, right, and that was on a computer, but they just blocked access to anything that could access the internet. So like, really, at this point, I feel like it's kind of
redundant.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I don't really understand, you know, why they don't just do that instead of having to shut down an entire country's internet or lock you into a Google Form quiz or whatnot. Just, like, don't... Just take out the internet entirely, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, Malaysia's really good at doing that. You know, they could learn a lot of lessons from, you know, from people here,
seriously,
right?
I just don't understand. Like, if cheating is such a problem because technology is involved... Mm. Remove the technology.
I'm sure there are other issues behind, you know, removing internet access on the device itself. But anyway, this is one of Google's solutions to the cheating. And they've also introduced another new feature that will allow parents a little more control of the school-issued devices by being able to set off hours. So the controls are similar to most parental control functionalities on devices like that you can find on a Kindle, say, which limit children from accessing certain apps and content. So when kids should be sleeping or focusing on coursework, on homework, they won't be able to, I don't know, YouTube.
Right.
Mm.
I mean, that's fair enough.
It's helpful.
Yeah.
It's helpful.
Helpful.
Thank you, Google.
But, you know, to go back to Chris's point, just, you know, deny access, you know?
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, right?
Mm.
But it's nice to see that Google are finally taking a little bit of the responsibility, perhaps. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gents, if you want to get in touch, don't forget, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. We started off with that story about an AI matchmaker that could mine Twitter to find you a date. Let us know if you have used Twitter to find somebody, or it sounds really strange on the show. Or, you know, what do you use Twitter for? Is there stuff that you would tweet that perhaps people might think, oh, I'd like to date this person? Let us know. I'm just curious. 018-789-8899. Let's have some music. It is Duffy with Mercy here on Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, in the studio with...
Audrey Raj.
And Christine Wong.
I started off the show today with a story about how an AI matchmaker could mine Twitter to help you find a date. We're asking you guys out there in the Twitterverse to get in touch via Twitter at BFM Radio or via WhatsApp on 018-789-8899 to let us know, you know, whether or not you've met somebody on Twitter and what you've used it for. We've had a couple of messages during the break. What have we had, Chris?
Yes, so this is on Twitter from at Jeremy X, but Jeremy has the second E as a 3. Okay. And they say, I use Twitter to tweet to BFM and participate in giveaways. Which,
awesome.
You know,
yes.
To be
yeah.
fair. But I think that's kind of like my point, though. Like, I don't really understand how CompuNet works, because I think that's what a lot more people use it for. It's to communicate with corporate accounts or to participate in like giveaways and stuff. It's not actually like talking to people directly. So I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I mean, I use it like that to talk to people directly, but, you know, rarely. It's,
yeah.
It's normally about, like, it's where I put my brain farts.
I'm literally just retweeting, like, oh, someone has an opinion. I like it. Someone has an opinion. I like it. Someone has an opinion.
But
I like it.
But there you go. You know, it's someone's opinion. So
yeah.
I guess...
But it might not be... It's not my own stuff.
But then the couple net will end up hooking you up with this person whose opinion you might like.
Mm.
Dun,
maybe.
Dun, dun. Right, moving on to story number 3. So 2,000 immigrant kids who were taken from their parents parents when they crossed the U.S. border, U.S.-Mexico border, as a result of the Trump administration's new zero-tolerance immigration policy. A company is stepping up, or have stepped up, to help some kind of offer to help offer offered to help. Oh my word! And they've taken some precautions, though, haven't they?
Well, okay. So what this is that. Obviously, yes, as you said, because of the Trump administration's new zero-tolerance immigration policy, quite a lot of immigrant kids have been taken from their parents and separated and put in shelters several states away. And the Trump administration has said that they want to end the policy of family separation specifically, and that they, quote-unquote, know the location of all the children in their custody, and they have a plan for reunification, but they don't have a clear timeline or further details. And there are some nonprofits and attorneys working on cases that say that they've struggled to locate children for their clients. In some cases, children may have been listed under the wrong name or age in their intake papers, and toddlers may not remember their parents' full names. Like in one case, a six-year-old was only able to reach a family member because she'd memorized a phone number.
Wow.
So,
when was the last time you memorized a phone number?
I actually have my quite a few phone numbers memorized, so that's fun. But the point is that, you know, there's an issue with how difficult it's going to be to reunite these children with their families, and if it's even possible at all. And in response to that, there are two companies that have kind of, you know, tried to reach out, and those are the DNA testing companies 23andMe and MyHeritage. Now, they both announced that they would provide free testing kits to parents and children to help connect them again.
To the immigrants.
Yes. Right. So this is to the to the kids and the parents, and MyHeritage, which is also donated tests to help adoptees find their birth families, said it would provide 5,000 kits. That it was contacting relevant government agencies and nonprofits, and 23andMe is specifically only working with nonprofit legal aid organizations. And a spokesperson for MyHeritage said that they plan to handle all the data themselves rather than sharing it with third parties. The data would be protected as it is for other customers, and if someone wants to have their DNA records destroyed, then they could request that. But it's still data, and these offers have raised a few ethical questions. So, for example, both Races Texas, which is RAICES, and the Texas Civil Rights Project, who are civil rights groups that work with immigrant families, and Texas, I believe, is one of the main states where these shelters are, have declined the offer from these two companies because they said that these are already very vulnerable communities, and this would potentially put their privacy at risk. You know, they're keeping in mind the fact that MyHeritage themselves have recently reported a data breach. It had nothing to do with the DNA data, but they've been breached before. So what is going to stop that from potentially happening again? And law enforcement could also potentially subpoena genetic information to use in future criminal investigations as well, right? So it's just like, you know, when you have this data, you know, what could it be used for in the future,
yeah.
Especially because these are already this is already a community that's being targeted, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is that there's also a risk that a test could accidentally reveal information that could have unwanted consequences.
Right.
Because sometimes
parentage.
Right. Yes. Let's say a father finds out that, you know, the kid that he thought was his is not biologically his. It could perhaps like lead to, you know, maybe being violent against the mother or something like that. We don't know what's going to happen when this information is released. Not to mention that, again, these are kids that have been separated from their parents, and a child does need to have the consent of a legal guardian to take the test in the first place. So how does consent work when, you know, to take a DNA test when their parent is in duress under custody? You know, there doesn't seem to be any acknowledgement of those problems from both companies as well. And the other thing is the fact that you have to request to have your DNA destroyed. Surely you could just have the samples automatically destroyed after testing rather than requiring families to request that it happens. I don't think it's the first thing on your mind.
Well, another way of looking at it would be, what if, let's say, for example, there's two parents who have lost their child. Could they request to one of these companies a DNA test for their child? Could they do that rather than it be a kind of done with a broad brush and everybody does it?
Yeah, I think that would be a good way of
it'd be a compromise.
Doing it. But the problem with that also is then, like, you know, how do they communicate with these parents? Because, like, if these parents are in custody and stuff, they might not be in the right frame of mind to make, you know, some of these pretty massive decisions about the data of their children's DNA. You know, so and the other thing as well is that what if the child doesn't have you know, a father or mother. Maybe they came with a grandparent or an uncle or an aunt or something like that. You know, so it's, it doesn't answer all the questions. Like, I appreciate that these companies are, first of all, very clearly trying to help.
Right.
You know, like, I think that, you know, as as terrifying as some, as the amount of data that they have on people is, but they're at least trying to reach out to these communities that are trying desperately to reunite with their kids. You know, but at the same time, I can't help but wonder, have they thought this through thoroughly?
Well, I mean, it's, we're having this debate because we feel as though they haven't. And obviously, there's a lot of other people who think they haven't.
Yeah.
And maybe the fact that some, like Texas and the race group and whatever, are saying no, perhaps it just means they have to go back to the table, have a bit more of a discussion, and decide how they could implement this so that it benefits everybody.
Yeah. And I think the saddest thing is that this had to be offered in the first place.
Right, yeah.
Because, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's my thoughts. Thoughts. Exactly. Why did it have to come to this? And why weren't these, before the separation happened, why weren't they logged or monitored or in some way documented? Mm. As in, you know, this couple is going to prison X, but the child is housed here, you know, or like has a two-year-old, has a toddler. Before, was it just okay, I'm just gonna rip this family apart and take the parents or caregivers over here and put the children in a cage over there? Was that what was done?
Right.
So yeah, so there is some you know, there is a sign that there are some complete and accurate records that are out there, not for everybody, unfortunately, but the Texas Civil Rights Project, which is working with nearly 400 people who have been separated from family members since May, you know, they've been trying to, it's a lot less about the accuracy of the records, but it's the time constraint of trying to match families together before the parents get deported. So it, that's their main issue. It's less about the DNA stuff than it is just about they don't have time, you know, to actually, like, for example, one problem that parents have had when trying to locate the children is that no one has answered the hotline set up at the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Whoa. And the sheer volume of cases makes the process even harder. Like, you know, each call can maybe take about 40 minutes and the organization is working to help like 381 people. And it's so much. So, you know, on the one hand, like I said, you know, maybe these DNA companies might help, but it's also not really addressing a lot of the main problems, which is just there's so many people to deal with.
Yeah,
and there's no time.
Well, on that note, let's take some let's take some music. If you want to get in touch via Twitter, we are at BFM Radio. Of course, we are asking you a question as to whether or not you've met somebody via Twitter, and I don't mean just, you know, met somebody. I mean met somebody via Twitter. Or if you know, what do you use Twitter for? I mean, we just kind of give us a baseline. I complain at people on Twitter. I air my views on Twitter. I have a bit of fun on there. I'm at Mr. Rich, by the way. That's 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp, by the way. Audrey?
Yes.
Anything to say before we go to the break?
I just retweet stuff in articles on Twitter. But bear in mind, if you plan to tweet in to us today, CoupleNet, they're watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, the reason Twitter became really very useful a few years ago was that there was an earthquake in China.
Right.
Many, many years ago. 2007, 2008. Many, many years ago. Not at all. And the first time anybody heard about it was via Twitter. So in that way, in terms of breaking news, it's very, very useful.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
When it's accurate. Right, music. Coming up, we've got two songs back to back. We've got Pink Floyd with Young Lust, followed by Split Enz with My Mistake here on BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio today by
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
Now, despite what we've been told in the past about how our phone can make us depressed and certain apps can really irritate us, and they can be what was it they said about Instagram? How it's the leading cause.
It's one of it's the number one social media app that causes depression amongst teens.
That.
Yes.
Audrey now has a story about want to feel happier and how your phone can help. Maybe.
Yeah. So maybe is the key word here. So I think the Center of Disease Control and Prevention recently revealed that in the U.S., the suicide rate is at a 30-year high right now, with many people contemplating mental well-being. So with this stat in mind, in 2015, Poppy Jamie is her name. She was hosting Snapchat's first talk show, and it's called Pillow Talk with Poppy, when she began to think that there was a particular trend that was plaguing millennials. So she began incubating a new brain health app called Happy Not Perfect. Why did she do this? Because she said she would get hundreds and hundreds of messages from all these young people around the world, and she realized that everybody was saying the same thing. I'm so stressed. It didn't matter from which country, what gender, what age, it was unanimous. Everyone was stressed. And after this revelation by the CDC, suicide is now the second leading cause of death among 15 to 34 years old.
The leading cause of death?
Yes. I'm sorry, second leading cause of death. So, Jamie, she spent the last 3 years since that Snapchat talk show working with experts in the fields of psychotherapy, mindfulness, and neuroscience in order to better understand the brain and develop an app that will help, hopefully help. What the app would do is try to distill learning down to a daily 5-minute mental workout that she hopes will help people be happier with life. So this is what she said. We have 40 to 60,000 thoughts on every single day, and 98% of them are the same thoughts that we had yesterday, and about 80% of these thoughts are negative.
Right?
So we've got repeated negative thoughts, a majority of them. And we have to change our behavior to create a mindset shift. But we're never told that. We're never told how to process a breakup or a death or a traumatic experience, right?
In England, they just say, get on with it, keep your chin up, and that's it.
Yeah,
that's
and then you have to deal
and everywhere else, we just repress all of our feelings.
Right.
Or eat our feelings.
Or eat our feelings.
Yes, yes. So she also doesn't think that people understand what it is to be happy. There's been a real confusion over what happiness is. And she thinks that when people start to feel, people are starting to feel disillusioned. And this is a really good quote here. She says, happiness is not the absence of problems, but the ability to deal with them. The ability
like
to deal with problems, right? So she's released a new happiness app after this 3-year study with all these experts. And it's free to begin with. It's called Happy Not Perfect. It's designed to biohack the brain in just 5 minutes. Step one, you check in. And this helps to decrease the impact of an emotion just by acknowledging that you have this emotion. You are experiencing this emotion. Step two, breathing. It takes you out of the fight or flight symptoms. And then step three, journaling. It allows you to process, digest, and let go of whatever it is that you're feeling in a digital fire ceremony, as she calls it. Step four, gratitude. So it shifts the focus of whatever you're feeling onto a positive note. Step five, a mini mind game that disrupts your thought patterns. Step six, a compassion challenge that will help boost self-esteem. And step seven, vibes, which lets you pay these positive and good self-esteem feelings into like to the next person, right?
Just
pay it forward. So that's what the app does. All of this is done in 5 minutes. So if you're really feeling down or you feel like you're having a problem or like a challenge that you just can't deal with at the moment, just log on to the app and go through these seven steps in just 5 minutes, and hopefully it could help.
But you said it was free at first.
Yeah. So there is a subscription to this as well. It's about $10 for 1 month, $40 for about 6 months.
But and the subscription is only if you want to use the guided meditations, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So the rest of it is free.
Yeah.
Yes, but this is my issue. I am a little bit like, I've downloaded a few like a meditation or like self-help or whatever apps in the past. And a lot of them have this same model where you can only access some of the features and then you have to pay for the rest. And it's like, you're a mental health app. You know what I mean? You're supposed to help people calm down, but the things that could actually help, you're forcing them to pay for. Because a lot of the things that are like, okay, so let's say, for example, Headspace. I believe that the first couple of exercises, like the really short ones, the 5-minute ones, they're available. And then the entire library of specific things are you have to pay for. So I'm just sitting here like, it seems paradoxical to me that you would create an app that is supposed to help people feel better. It's supposed to help people relax. It's supposed to help people have an outlet. But you charge for the things that are that might help?
Well, I mean, you can look at it like that, or you can look at it as if you don't want to go to a meditation class, which you'd pay for, if you don't want to go to a yoga class, which you'd pay for, you know, or if you didn't want to go to a psychologist, which you'd pay for, you could pay for a subscription to use it on your phone.
I mean, I guess so, but it's a big, I think, well, I don't know about
I mean, at the end of the day, they've got to make money as a developer and as a company,
which
right?
is true, but the thing is that, like, there are other apps that you can, you know, that don't have the same use, but they don't charge for, you know, there's no subscription model, that sort of thing. You know, you could potentially do like a one-off payment or something for the rest of the app, and then that would be fine. I would actually be fine with that. But the fact of the matter is the subscription element makes me a bit uncomfortable.
Right.
And the thing is, I think that, I don't know, people can correct me on this if they want to, but I think one of the big draws of a mental health app is that sometimes people are not in a position to pay regularly for something like a therapist or a psychologist or someone like that.
Agreed. But then again, you know, I would feel that what would be more disruptive to using an app like this and not having to pay for it was to see ads. So that would upset me. So yeah, I guess, you know, I'd rather pay for a subscription and not see ads and not have ads kind of like
particularly
help
not
my
hearing ads.
Exactly.
You know, can you imagine you're in the middle of your meditation? Are you feeling better? You know, I'd be like, oh, this
That's
is driving
fair.
Me crazy.
That's
All fair. Right, we have to take a short break because we are running out of time. Let's have some music from the Get Up Kids with Stay Gone. If you want to get in touch, don't forget WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Do we have something already?
Yeah, so this is actually in relation to this mental health app situation, and this is on a Twitter from @PersonaRay, and they say, if I were depressed, I'd be hesitant to subscribe because it's a very difficult commitment for someone who feels so hopeless. So yeah, I agree with that, to be honest.
All right, music, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. It is the Get Up Kids with Stay Gone. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, our final story of the day about how much Instagram is estimated to be worth if it were its own standalone company. Don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, and I'm joined in the studio by
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
Final story of the day. Here we go. Instagram is estimated to be worth more than $100 billion. If it were a standalone company, that is.
Yes.
Marking a 100-fold return for the app purchased in 2012. This is according to data compiled by Bloomberg Intelligence. So they reached 1 billion monthly active users earlier this month, and it will likely help nudge them their revenue past $10 billion over the next 12 months. Bloomberg Intelligence analyst Jitendra Warrell wrote in a report on Monday. So this is Instagram is attracting new users faster than Facebook's main site and is on track to exceed 2 billion users within the next 5 years. That is insane. While the social network already has surpassed that milestone, Instagram's audience is younger than its parent, making it more attractive to advertisers. And unlike Facebook, Instagram is still growing in the US. So Instagram could account for more than for about 16% of Facebook's revenue over the next year, up from 10.6% last year, according to e-marketer data cited by Bloomberg Intelligence. They also announced the addition of Instagram Television, or IGTV, as we know, last week, as an attempt to catalyze future growth. Most of Instagram's 2018 revenue growth will still likely come from its newsfeed ads, as the platform is still developing the TV side of things. Now, Facebook shares slipped 3.7% to $194.23 at 2:12 p.m. in New York, as the market also declined a little bit. Stock has gained 10% so far this year, compared with 1.5% gain in the Standard & Poor's 500 index. $100 billion.
That's a lot of dollars.
It's a lot of dollars, right? I mean, and like we were sat listening to Sarah Leanne and Manisha Jay and Jonathan
Davies from GetCraft.
Jonathan Davies from GetCraft yesterday, and they were talking about just how quickly Instagram was growing, and how here in Malaysia it's kind of an untapped market, and it's just starting to blossom, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And the thing is, you know, like the article just said, you know, Instagram is still growing in the US, unlike Facebook.
Yeah.
And Instagram's audience is younger than its parent. You know, you ask parents out there if they would allow their kids to have a Facebook account, they would say no. Ask them if they would allow their kids to have an Instagram account, they most probably already do have an Instagram account, right?
Yeah. And what is interesting about Instagram is that, well, first of all, you know, it's starting to add in new features like IGTV that we've talked about before on BizBytes as well, but it doesn't feel as invasive.
I agree.
You don't necessarily have to put things like your age or where you are or whatever on your profile. You don't have to do that. I've put my age up there, for example, but you don't actually have to. But you can post, first of all, the aesthetic of things is something that I think is a really interesting trend that Instagram likes to capitalize on. And the youngins are interested in that sort of thing. So it's an interesting... it's an interesting untapped market for sure.
Yeah, and I think there's a rule for digital marketers on Facebook versus Instagram when you want to advertise as well. I think Instagram has higher engagement. Facebook has higher visibility for your ads or your content. But Instagram has that younger audience that will bring in the advertising dollars.
Kill two birds with one stone. Mm-hmm. Post to Instagram, share it to your Facebook page.
Yeah.
That will work, right? Okay, we have to wrap up. Ladies and gentlemen, that's all the time we have for today. But before we go, we'll quickly run through the stories just in case you missed any, so that you know what to listen to when you listen to the podcast, of course, via the BFM app, which is available on Apple, on the Apple Store or on Google Play. Let's start off with...
So we started off with how an AI matchmaker called CoupleNet could mine Twitter to find you a date.
Weird.
Yeah, so that is if you decide to go with the AI matchmaker and not the IA matchmaker, which is the Indian auntie matchmaker.
Very nice.
She's Audrey's making puns now.
I'm so proud.
What is happening to me?
I'm so proud.
Then that story about the new Google Classroom update that makes it harder for kids to cheat on quizzes. But we all feel they should just shut down the internet.
Yes.
Yes. And then we sadly talked about why immigration groups have said no to using DNA testing companies like 23andMe and MyHeritage to reunite separated kids.
Mm-hmm.
Then that story about how the suicide rate in the U.S. is about a 30-year high, and how there is an app called Happy Not Perfect that can help you, well, kind of shift your mindset into a happier state in just 5 minutes.
Second largest cause of death amongst the young
15 to 34 year olds.
That's just
suicide.
Crazy. Yeah. Okay, and then of course we wrapped up with how Instagram is estimated to be worth over $100 billion. That's just crazy.
If it wasn't owned by Facebook.
It wasn't owned by Facebook, yes. But don't go anywhere. Coming up after the news, of course, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. So the Alpha Rate.
REIT. Real Estate Investment Trust.
There you go. Those. They oversee the first education REIT in the country. The Breakfast Grill spoke to our property veteran, Dato Stuart Labroy, on the company's prospects and plans moving forward. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. We better wrap up then. We've got some music to take us into the break. It's a little bit of the Kings of Leon. And being as it was the rock thing yesterday, let's have a little bit of Sex on Fire, shall we?
Yeah.
On BFM. Christine is going, what? This is Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.